Later on, Henry II builds the Angevin Empire in France. Later on still, John loses a substantial part of that territory to King Philip II of France and so on. But again and again and again, there is this English interest in France and a corresponding French interest in sort of evicting the English. Well, in 1340, Edward III of England claimed the throne of France through his wife, who was a French princess, and as a result opened a war that lasted in one way or another until 1453. Now, it was a very odd war in a lot of ways. There were only three major campaigns during this entire period of time. It was a time where there were bands of freebooters rampaging in France who were sort of unleashed by this war, but actually weren't under anybody's particular control. In fact, were probably, it'd be fair to say, a problem for everybody. It was a very odd war in which, for example, in 1429, the Maid of France, Jeanne d'Arc, Joan of Arc, appeared and rallied the French after the Treaty of Troyes had very nearly handed France, wrapped up with a pretty bow on it, to England. It was a war in which the English won all the great battles and at times held much of France. And yet in the end, the English lost the war and retained only a little area in the north around the port of Calais. So the military history of the Hundred Years' War, though interesting to historians of the military, is less important to us, I think, than some of the internal implications of this war, some of the internal consequences of this war, for both France and England. For France, in spite of a very long period of suffering defeat after defeat after defeat and facing a foreign army on one's own soil, almost none of this war was fought on the sea or in the British Isles. This war was fought in France. But gradually, the war heightened the sense of national consciousness. It began forging something that we might provisionally call France, a feeling of being French in contesting the English foe. There's unquestionably a certain amount of professionalization of the French military that took place over the course of this war. The French almost got to universal conscription. Now, they wouldn't actually get to that point until the time of Napoleon, but they almost got there during the Hundred Years' War. Several effective, very effective, forms of taxation were generated and generalized as a result of this war. And again, curiously enough, despite being defeated again and again and again in the early stages of the war, the fact that eventually the French kings won in this war substantially enhanced their prestige and launched the French monarchy on that trajectory of glory that would lead to the Sun King in the 17th century. For England, the war enhanced the role of Parliament. Remember when we left Parliament in the 13th century, it was a sort of an accidentally created institution whose composition and powers were anything but clear. During the course of the Hundred Years' War, English kings needed money in order to finance their armies to go and fight in France. The members of the English Parliament became very clever at applying the principle of redress before supply. That is to say, they would say to the king, you want money for this, that, or the other purpose? Fine. First, you must grant us concessions. The Parliament got immunity for its members. The king couldn't round them up and harass them when he didn't like them. The Parliament got the right to choose its own speaker. The Parliament got the right to initiate legislation rather than merely responding to proposals sent to it by the Crown. Slowly but surely, in other words, the Hundred Years' War built the Parliament into a much more permanent and durable position in the English scheme of government. Now, Parliament has a long history in front of it still after the 15th century. I don't want to imply that every power and aspect of Parliament is already in place. But we can predict what Parliament's future would look like in, let us say, 1400 more readily than we could have done so in 1300. There was a sense in which the Hundred Years' War also, however, distracted the English from certain potentially pressing problems at home. There were problems of religious division. We'll refer to those a little bit later in this lecture. But there were also powerful and deep factional divides in the English aristocracy that were kept in check to a degree by the war and then burst out in its last phases and after its conclusion. These factional squabbles, indeed, issued in a civil war that we call the Wars of the Roses that went on sporadically between 1455 and 1489.